This is a No Surf Music Burning River Fireside Chat
with guest Rachel Brooke.
I'm your host, Jason D. Diesel Hammond. For the best in Americana, alt country, indie rock, and more, point your browser to nosurfmusic.com. And this is another edition of No Surf Music Burning River Fireside Chats. And joining me today is Rachel Brooke. How you doing, Rachel?
Good.
All right. And we are in the basement of Now That's Class, the west side of Cleveland. And you're about to do a show in support of your album, which came out last December, right?
Yeah.
And the name of that is?
A Killer's Dream.
All right. And hopefully everybody has read my review of it by now and are sitting down to learn a little bit more about you. So I guess the first thing that we should mention, since we are in Cleveland and you are from Michigan, is we should hate you.
Yeah.
But I think we can get past that, right?
Yeah. For some weird reason, Ohio doesn't like Michigan, and Michigan doesn't like Ohio.
Well, you know, we actually fought a war once.
Oh, is it for that little piece of land?
Yeah, where Toledo is now. It was technically part of Michigan, but Ohio wanted it. And so there was a little bit of a shooting battle, and we kind of fought over it for a while.
Yeah.
And Ohio got Toledo, and that's why you got the Upper Peninsula. Exactly.
Yes.
So that's why we hate each other now. Instead of shooting each other, we just fight it out on the football field.
Yeah, I thought it had something to do with football, but I don't watch football.
Well, that's probably for the best. but for the record, Michigan sucks. Just the football team.
Well, the football team, I don't care what you say about the football team.
There we go.
But Michigan as a state is good.
Okay. Well, actually, you are from Grayling, is that correct?
Yes.
And I have never actually been there, but I've driven by there quite a number of times, and it's pretty much in the middle of nowhere, right?
When did you drive up there?
Well, I have a buddy who has a lake house, that's a little bit northeast of there.
Like Traverse City?
Kind of Alpena, that area.
Oh, Alpena. Okay, yeah, northeast, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, that's okay.
So you went through Grayling.
Indeed. So yeah, you're pretty much out in the woods, not too much around there.
Well, actually, where I grew up is, I say Grayling because it's the closest big, I mean, I went to, like, Grayling schools, when, you know, I mean, I haven't left. I mean, I did leave, but, like, came back because I like it. But where I actually live and grew up is in Lovells, which is, even farther out in the woods.
Okay.
So, it's like this little tiny town that's like 600 people who live there.
How many stoplights do you have?
In Lovells?
Sure.
None.
But lots and lots of trees, right?
Yes, and river.
So, in a weird way, I think that kind of informs your sound.
Huh?
Because you do have this kind of rootsy, earthy sound. And I don't think you would get that kind of thing if you lived in the north in a city.
Yeah, I don't know either. It's hard to say.
Okay. Well, let me ask you then. I know both of your parents are musicians, is that correct? And they mostly play bluegrass.
Yep, my dad plays bluegrass. My mom, she isn't really a musician now because they're divorced, but my dad kind of taught her how to play the bass.
Okay.
So when they were together, she played. She doesn't play anymore.
I gotcha.
Yeah, my dad plays the guitar and banjo.
Okay, and you've played some of that bluegrass action with him as well,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I still do. Yep.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so is that sort of the first music that you came to know?
Yes.
Okay.
That's the first music that I ever heard, probably. And then as I got to like three or four, my brother, who is here, he plays the drums.
Mm-hmm.
He's like 6 years older than me, and he was going through a Beach Boy phase. So like when I was like 3, 4, 5, I first heard the Beach Boys.
Mm-hmm.
So then I started to really like the Beach Boys.
I did that too, actually.
Yes. Yeah?
We used to go and see them when I was a kid quite often.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like when you're about that age, somewhere between 6 and 9, it's like the perfect music for you.
It is. And then, I mean, for their early stuff, because it's kind of like poppy.
Right.
And then, you know, it's good music, but it's really accessible to, like, anyone, any age.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, the Beach Boys later stuff, like Pet Sounds and older, is, I don't know if it's, a, you know, I guess kids would like it. I don't know. Well, I mean, think Smile is right. way out there.
Some of the individual songs from Pet yes. Sounds and stuff I could see you getting, but oh, yeah. certainly when you're that young, you wouldn't understand, like, the masterpiece
yeah,
that Pet
exactly.
Sounds was. At the
but
time.
It is right. You're right. When you're young, it's, like, fun music.
Exactly. But then you went through a punk phase, right?
Yes.
So,
yeah.
how did that happen?
Well, I was in middle school, and then I had a friend who was a couple years older than me, I think like 3 years older than me, lived down the road from us, and it's like this, I don't even know, like, his name's James, he owns a record store in Grayling now, but like, out of nowhere, it's like this pop culture, like, genius, like, in the middle of nowhere, like, you know, like, he's just really into music, and kind of introduced me to a lot of punk rock, and, you know, just some really cool stuff, and he would give me, like, compilation CDs and stuff when I was, like, in middle school, and I started listening to that, and in high school, I really got into it, and played in a couple bands, and then I played in this band with my friend Kelly, who she was really into, like, hardcore punk rock. Which isn't really my thing. I like it. I like punk rock that's got more of a melody to it.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm not really into, like, hardcore punk, but we played, that's the kind of music we played, even though, you know, that's something I really liked.
So you just took the opportunity to scream a lot and
well,
bash things?
I was the drummer, actually.
Oh, nice. So you were really bashing things.
Yes, I was actually literally bashing things.
Okay. And how long did you play with them?
Crime Disease was the name of the band. Okay. We were together for 2 years. 2 years. It was like high school and then like a little out of high school. And then, actually, a couple years ago, again, I was in a punk band called The Clots.
Okay.
Drumming. And that was like a Detroit band. And we played around a little bit. And that only lasted for like a year.
Okay.
They were together for a long, long time. But I ended up getting in there, like, towards the end, and then everybody, it just kind of fizzled.
So it was all your fault, basically.
It probably was, actually.
I think I opened up some deep wounds there.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
No, actually, I don't know what happened.
Bands, it happens,
yeah.
you know? So then, how did you sort of turn from that back to more of the rootsy music?
Well, okay, like, when I was in high school and playing, like, the punk rock stuff, that's kind of somewhere in that zone, or somewhere in that time, I don't know. I don't know what happened. I think I just heard a Hank Williams song, and I was like, oh, yeah, I like that. I like this. So, like, I was thinking, maybe I'll get another Hank Williams CD, just listen to it, and then that's where it all started, I think.
It's a good place to start,
yeah.
I have to say.
Yeah, I mean, like, I heard it all the time when I was little, but it was, in my mind, I think it was, like, when I, that was, like, my childhood or something. I was transitioning,
okay.
I think. And then I heard it again, and I was like, yes, that's what I like. You know what I mean? That's,
mm-hmm.
like, what I know or something. You know what I mean? Like, that's, it just gave me a good feeling. Like, I remembered that or something.
Well, I think a lot of times, you sort of like what we were talking about with the Beach Boys. You take what you knew as a kid, and you look at it, you know, 20 years down the line or whatever it is, and it seems familiar.
Yeah.
It's what you know, like you said, but you have a whole new appreciation
yes,
for it.
That's exactly.
I mean, you wouldn't have gotten Hank when you were six.
No, oh, no.
I mean, he might have
yeah.
sounded cool. You might have liked the little cowboy lyrics and all
yeah.
that. But you
wouldn't
have gotten him.
I
wouldn't
listen to it, really.
Yeah.
I mean, because when you're six or whatever, you know, young, you know, lots of times you're not really, I don't know, really listening in the right way. You're just kind of...
Well,
like,
you're listening for the right way when you're six.
Yeah, exactly.
You get a little more maturity on you.
Yeah.
And, you know, now you can listen to it like you're a, you know, more mature adult.
Yeah, you get it. You get what they're saying, I guess.
Exactly. Okay. So, how did you decide then... Once you got into that type of music, that this was the thing that you wanted to do, was write sort of this country blues fusion kind of stuff.
I don't know if I ever made that decision.
Okay.
I just started writing and put it on a CD. and then I made a website. sell it or whatever, and then people liked it, and then it just started from there, I guess. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't actually plan. I just keep moving. I just keep busy.
Right.
And then it just everything else just kind of, like, happens.
Well, that's kind of what life is.
Yeah.
I mean, people make all these plans, and life is just kind of the shit that happens.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I didn't make any plan, and I still don't. I just do what I want, and then let things happen the way they're supposed to.
Okay, okay. And the way things have happened so far is you've released 3 albums under your own name.
Yeah.
And you've sort of sung on or played on a sort of slew of others.
Yeah.
But let's sort of focus on the 3 Rachel Brooke albums.
Okay.
The first 2 were pretty much entirely on your own, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And you recorded them all lo-fi.
Yeah.
Was that a conscious choice on your part, or was it literally just the kind of equipment that you had?
Well, the first one, wasn't on purpose. I wrote the song. Okay, I struggle sometimes because when I write a song, I'm just writing it with me and my guitar.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes I think, that sounds good like that. Why do I need to add anything? You know what I mean? So, like, the first one was definitely that. Like, I didn't want to really add that much to it because I thought, like, this is good just the way it is. These are just songs that I'm putting on a CD. And then Down in the Barnyard was really simple, too. With, like, a touch of added stuff to it, because I like the way things sound, but I'm, like, I always, like, get, you know, frustrated with myself because I don't let myself do what I know I can do. So, it's, like, so the first 2 were kind of lo-fi on purpose, but also kind of, you know, a struggle. A struggle with, like, what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And what I didn't let myself do. You know what I'm saying?
No.
Did I just totally mess that all
No, up? No, I think you were following your own train of thought, and it just sort of crossed in a weird place. Let me see if I can interpret for everybody,
okay,
and
yeah.
Maybe they'll get... So, basically, I mean, I understand what you're talking about in the first one. That makes sense.
Okay.
I guess what you're saying for the second one is you had a little bit more of an expansive vision for that one, and you did end up adding a little bit
more. Yeah.
But it wasn't necessarily entirely the direction
yeah.
that you thought it could go.
Exactly.
So was that basically just because you didn't really have the resources at the time?
It was because I was doing it all by myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I usually, like, I have, you know, I like to do everything by myself because I don't really necessarily trust other people's opinions about things because it's what it is. It's an opinion, and everybody's is different. And I'm pretty, like, I know what I want, and I know what I like. So I was like, I'm just going to do this all by myself, and that's just the way it's going to be. But see, the thing is, like, even though I played the instrument, like, a lot of the instruments on that, I'm also, like, limited. You know what I mean? So the next one, I wanted a full sound, and I had to bring other people in. And, you know, that's why. But, like, yeah, basically... Sorry, I'm going off again.
No?
Okay. Well, yeah, basically, those were a little bit more lo-fi because of, you know, I was doing it all by myself.
Okay. Okay. I mean, I can totally respect that.
Yeah.
As long as you admit that my opinions are important
and
they are always right.
Yeah, no, so. Everybody's... No, you know what I'm saying. Like, when it comes to your own art, it's like, you don't really... It's like almost kind of like someone tells you should do something and you're like, you don't know.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
I get you. I just had to stroke my own megalomania there for a second, okay? I mean, that's really what we're here for,
yeah.
is to make me feel better. But you did actually segue nicely into talking about A Killer's Dream, which, like we said, is your 3rd album, and how you really did expand the sound, and you did that with the help of a backing band called Viva La Vox, correct?
Yep, Viva La Vox, and I did 2 sessions for that. I did 6 songs with Viva La Vox and 2 with another, with Nick Carnes, who's here on guitar tonight, and Bill Chase, he's not here, but that was the other 2 people that I did that session with.
Okay.
So it was split into 2. Mostly the album is Viva La Vox on it, but the song Serpentine Blues and A Killer's Dream is Nick.
Okay.
And he's here.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So, do you feel like you sort of got closer to the vision that you had for this album?
Yep, like, I do. I feel like this album is complete. Where, like, Down in the Barnyard, I didn't feel like it was.
Okay.
You know, like, I left it, I was like, okay, it's finished, but it's not complete. Like, I should have done this, or I should have done that. This one, I feel like I got it. I got it right where I wanted it. And although I'm already, like, thinking about doing another album and, like, making it better, like, that Down, or A Killer's Dream is something that, like, I'm satisfied with. For now.
Okay. Well, you know, there's nothing wrong with leaving yourself room to grow,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Although I did personally think it was a great album. And part of the reason I felt that, too, was even though you did have the full band thing going this time around, you still sort of kept the lo-fi feeling at heart.
Yeah.
I mean, you recorded it all live and to tape, right?
Yes.
Which almost nobody does anymore. So that's just impressive in and of itself. But you literally just, all in one room, played the songs, did your thing.
Yep.
And it really feels like that. It doesn't feel like one of those albums where you know everybody is in a separate room.
Oh, yeah.
Not even playing the same day, the same week, the same continent sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, like, I had to go back and do, like, the percussion parts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, the xylophone. But everything that you heard, basically, besides, like, the percussion, it's live.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And is that sort of what you want to keep doing in the future, or?
I don't know. I really wanted to do it for this one because I knew that it could be done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm like, I want to do it to tape because I like tape. I like the way it sounds.
And you actually put out cassettes, too,
yes.
Which I have to say is a little bit freaky, but it's all good.
It sounds good on tape,
okay.
I think. If you got a tape player, I swear that the album sounds really great on
if
tape.
If you could find a working tape player.
Yeah.
I'm a vinyl man myself, so.
Yeah. It sounds good on vinyl, too. I think it sounds good the best. Even I honestly will say, I think that it sounds best on tape.
Okay. is that the format that you used the most when you were a kid as well? Or
tape?
Well.
Or, like, listen to music?
Yeah.
I listened, when I first got a stereo, actually my brother hooked it up for me and it was records.
Okay.
Like my parents, like Beach Boy records and Beatles.
Uh-huh.
And then I finally got my first CD player when I was in like seventh or eighth grade. And my first CDs were Endless Summer, Beach Boys, and a compilation Beach Boy, like Greatest Hits or something. Those were my first CDs.
Okay. Because I kind of find, personally, sort of going back to what we were talking about, of the music that you listen to as kids, we all sort of also, in a way, go back to the formats
we
used as kids. I mean, if your first, you know, even your kids' albums or whatever were on 45s or something, that kind of gets ingrained in your mind.
Yeah.
So I guess, you know, the kids that had parents who bought the CDs early and never had the joy of analog music...
Yeah.
Have a completely different spin on things.
Yeah, well, maybe you're right. But I listen, like, this is the thing, like, with me, I didn't get a CD player in my car until I was 25.
Okay.
So, up until then, I was making tapes still.
I gotcha.
That was only a couple years ago. So, like, I just listened to tapes in my car. And I, even when I was in high school riding the bus or whatever, I'd listen to tapes. Like, you know what I mean? Because CD players would burn up batteries. You know, like those little Walkmans.
Okay.
Too many batteries.
The Discman. The Walkman was actually
okay,
with the
tape,
right?
Okay,
yeah,
I had a Walkman.
Okay.
And I used that all the way until I got a car, and then I had a tape player in my car. So I used tapes up until, like, a few years ago.
Now we're probably going to get sued by Sony, but that's
yeah.
Okay. So this whole process that you've gone through... actually kind of reminds me of a friend of ours here at No Surf, who's from the Norwalk area. I don't know if you know him, Chris Castle. Have you ever run across his music before?
Sounds familiar.
Okay. Well, he is sort of a lo-fi kind of a guy as well. He's done a lot of his recordings pretty much the same way you've done them. But he decided for his last album, which was called Last Bird Home, to really just go all out and went out to Woodstock at the Levon Helm Studios and kind of was going for the same feel. Get the quality, but stick with the down-home kind of as simple as you can make it sound.
Mm-hmm.
Which is one of the reasons why I found your album so intriguing. But, you know, like we were saying, you do want to keep growing as an artist.
Yeah.
So what do you see, you mentioned you're already thinking about your next album a little bit, and I don't want to get too far in the future, but what do you see doing as far as recording on that album?
Well, as far as recording goes, I want to do tape again.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it'll be live or not, but I will definitely record to tape, just like it. And I have some ideas, but it's a little, I don't really know, I don't want to say it. Because
fair enough.
Yeah, I just
secrets of the trade.
Yeah,
right?
Because I also it's kind of a new idea. It's an idea that I had, and it could change. So I don't want to lock myself into this. You know what I mean?
Well, you can tell me after we turn the recorder off. That's
okay.
Fair enough.
Okay.
And then I'll tell you guys. You know, we'll slip it in a tweet or something. But so do you feel like you're pretty much set with the kind of instrumentation you've used in the last album, or do you want to expand that as well?
Yeah, I like different instruments. I want to put some piano in. I want to have some steel, which are all things I've always wanted to do, but I felt like I didn't really want it on this last album.
Mm-hmm.
But it is something that I would like to go, I'd like to try on another one.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
I could definitely see you grooving to some steel.
Yeah, I want to eventually have this really cool, like, classic sound. Just for, like, at least one.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Well, that is a good point. Because I want to talk about your sound a little bit, because
okay.
It is so unique in a lot of ways. I mean, you mentioned, you know, when you went back to the roots thing, the first touch point was Hank.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I can't remember all of it, but I think in my my review, I described you as something like Hank Williams' ghost with a vagina.
Yeah.
And there was Bessie Smith without a suntan. There were some other ones in there. But it's really interesting because you've got this blend of both the classic and the modern. And I think a lot of what's modern that comes through is the attitude. I mean, there were a lot of dark songs written back in the day, but the way that you write them is kind of this sort of tongue-in-cheek, sort of almost like you're in on your own joke some of the time kind of a deal.
Yeah.
You seem to agree with that.
Yeah.
Which I find interesting because this is the first time we've actually ever talked, but we've emailed a bit, and you fill your emails with emoticons, smiley faces, exclamation points, all of that. From just speaking to you for half an hour here, whatever it is, you seem like a rather nice young woman. I don't want to presume too much. But the way that you write is so dark and so evil in some ways. Where does that come from?
I don't know. I think that, I don't know, I think that I have probably issues.
You wouldn't be an artist if you didn't, okay?
Yeah, I mean, not like where they affect anybody, but they affect me in my mind.
Okay.
So, I guess a way that I can kind of deal with it is to put it into a song, I think. I mean, I don't honestly want to go out and hurt people, and I don't want to, you know, be mean or do anything wrong to anybody, but in my mind, I guess, and also it's fun songwriting, you know, I mean, I feel like it's more fun to write a song about something like that than it is to, you know, the sun shining down on me or something in a field, you know what I mean, like,
okay.
Yeah, you know I mean?
I don't remember the last time I was in a field with the sun shining down on me, but then again, you are from the middle of nowhere in Michigan.
Yeah, well, you know what I mean? Like, some happy stuff. I don't really think about... I don't think that way, usually, when I'm writing. I'm not in that place.
Okay. Well, I mean, I can understand that, you know, as something of a writer myself, and I find it interesting because somebody who, on the writing, the lyrics side of things at least, who I kind of would compare that to is Adam Turla of Murdered by Death. And I've talked to him and people in his band about this before. He's like the nicest guy ever. I mean, seriously, if you wanted to pick somebody on Earth to just hang out with for a day, he's a great choice. And yet, his stuff is so dark and just so ridiculously over the top sometimes. You wonder where the hell that comes from. And I think that's kind of the beauty of art. You know, like you said, everybody has these different facets that they don't necessarily get to express in a healthy way otherwise.
Okay.
I told you I'd take up the space there. So, is this the style of writing that you see yourself going forward with, or do you want to expand on that as well, along with expanding your sound?
I don't know. Try not to think about it too much. Because I feel like if I think about it too much, I'll get inside my own head and then scare myself or something. So I just write without thinking. I just write what I feel at the moment.
Okay.
And then just let it come out like that. Because, I mean, yeah, there's lots of different way, like writing styles and people's style. You know what I mean? Like, there's so many ways and, like, people can write a song just based on the same, like, event. Or, you know what I mean? But to me, I don't want to think about how I write it.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to, like, write and then hope it's a good one.
Okay.
You know?
Well, as a writer then, how do you determine which ones are the good ones? Which ones are album worthy? What's your process for that?
Well, I don't know. I've written a few that I don't like and never, I wrote them and then threw them away. And I think it's just like, I just know. Or something. You know what I mean? Like, I feel good about it. I'm like, this is good. Mm-hmm. This is good. You know, like, convince myself that it's good.
Okay. Well, that is the first step. You know, before you bring it out to the world or even to your friends, you have to think that it's worthy to do that.
Yeah. And for the most part, I mean, like, it's weird because, like, sometimes I'll write a song and it only took me, like, 10 minutes to a half hour. Other times, it has taken me months.
Mm-hmm.
To finish it and get it right, and it's kind of like if some of them are like, if I put enough time into it, if I put this much time into it, then it better be good, or you know what I mean. Like, I will force myself. Like, there's certain things I won't say in songs. There's certain like cliches that I will never use. You know what I mean? Like, it's like I try to think like away from that kind of style of writing, because like, there's lots of things that are just overdone.
Now, you're talking, sorry to interrupt, are you talking literal cliches here or topical cliches?
Topical.
Okay.
You know, so I just, you know, as long as I stay away from, like, those things, I feel like it's pretty good. You know?
Okay.
I think. I don't know, I never really thought about it.
Well, we're breaking new ground then, so I'm glad we could do that. I guess when I listen to your album, like I said, that is kind of one of the things that I hear. You know, if you're going to approach a song, it's going to be from a slightly different angle,
mm-hmm.
Which is what makes it sort of so enjoyable. You know, if you're going to do kind of a love song, it's going to be a depressive love song in one way or another. If you're going to do kind of, you know, the, how to describe it, I guess. Well, like you said, if you're going to go for the cliche thing, you're going to take that and turn it on its head in one way or another, which mm-hmm. I guess is what makes the album so entertaining to me.
I mean, people have written so many songs about the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I don't want to ever do that. And if, you know what I mean? Like, if there's another song out there that's similar to what mine was, I didn't hear it, because I don't, you know what I mean? Like, I don't ever try to write, like, another thing that I've heard. I want to write something new.
Well, I think that's what keeps everything's so fresh. Like I said, you have this sound that almost seems like it could be, you know, coming straight off of a dusty old 78. But I think it's that attitude, like I said, that sort of gives it the modern spin that really makes it different from everything else. So for people who maybe either haven't heard the album or who have heard it and want to get a little bit deeper, I just want to talk about a couple of songs before we take off here. I guess the first one, since we're talking about things that are a little bit different, is The Blackbird. And I remember hearing that for the first time, and it's just got this, like, big, loping kind of sound. It feels like it almost is some kind of a cartoon soundtrack. And that's what I had in my mind, and then I saw your video for it, which was basically just this really macabre cartoon.
Uh-huh.
How did you arrive at that sound for that particular song?
Well, that riff, that bump, 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 bump. I had that in my mind for a while.
Mm-hmm.
For a couple years ago, but I never did anything with it. And then I was just like, you know, when I started to, like, write the lyrics to that, I'm like, that's it. That's the one. You know, like, click. And it came together. And so, lyrics just fit, I guess.
Okay, that's fair enough. And was that one that sort of, when you were doing it, I guess, was that a vision that you could easily translate to everybody else who was working on it? Because it seems like, you know, like you said, it makes sense in your head.
Mm-hmm.
But how did you tell everybody else, you know, this is what we're going for, and make it work? Because it really is that one of those songs where it's at both ends of the spectrum at the same time. It's got that crazy darkness, yet at the same time it's got that kind of Roger Rabbit feel, you know?
You mean like for like when we were recording it?
Yeah, I guess so.
Well, the cool thing about Viva La Vox, Tony and Antoine, was that they have very similar interests or influences, and we like a lot of the same things.
Mm-hmm.
So when I started playing it, they hooked on real quick because they liked it. You know what I mean? They could kind of get what I was kind of going for. So I think that's the key, is to find people that are on the same level as far as like influences and music that, you know, they listen to or play. And then it all kind of comes together, right?
Okay. But then at the same time, you have some more traditional sort of bluesy numbers, for instance, Fox in the Hen House, something like that. I'm sure that one didn't take much explaining. You just sort of, you know, here we go, let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess, how would you set that apart from sort of the older standard kind of blues that you've heard before? Because you said, you know, you don't like to do anything that's been done.
Well, I think I wanted to capture it, but I wanted to make it new.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like capture that old style blues. And basically what I wanted to capture was the songwriting.
Okay.
I love the songwriting of, you know, music. Like old blues, I think it's just really, really good. And so that's what that song kind of was, is I wanted to do, you know, I wanted to somehow make the lyrics similar, but the music, I wanted something completely new. It's hard to explain. I knew what I wanted, though, when
okay.
I was writing it. I was like, I want this part to be down, like a downbeat, and then, like, I want the loud part, I want it to be super loud, crashy. Like, I, you know what I'm saying? Kind of like a...
I do.
Black and white. So, you know, when I was writing that song, I knew how I wanted it to sound, and I knew it would be different from, like, traditional blues, but also very much like it.
So I guess the nice thing about being a musician is you don't really have to explain exactly what you're doing and how it came about, because as long as you do it right, then it explains itself. So there you go. I guess you can hear it on the album. Another one I do want to ask about, though, is Old Faded Memory, which was the duet piece. And that was with Lonesome Wyatt's. And it's kind of, I think I put something to the effect of the most depressing yodel in history. It's a bit of a twisted love song there.
Mm-hmm.
It's depressing. It's crazy. I will let people listen to it for themselves to get the gist of it, and it really is worth it. But I guess my question is, how did you arrive at this sort of twisted tale? Because, you know, like I said in my review, if any of this is coming from an autobiographical perspective, I don't think you could necessarily get out of bed in the morning.
Well, I'll tell you how that song started. Mm-hmm. There was a, an older man that it was kind of family to me. And my family and I were taking him across the country to see his wife's family, and she'd passed away a long, long time ago. And we were taking him across the country to Missouri, and we were at a rest stop, and he was smelling like a lilac. And he said this was old.
He was smelling a flower at the rest stop. Not that he actually himself was smelling like a lilac.
No,
right?
No. Because
that's old people have a distinct smell. I just want to.
Yeah. He was smelling a lilac at the rest stop.
Okay.
We were sitting outside. It was really sunny. And he said this was Olga's favorite flower. And I thought that was really nice. And then he was smelling. He's like, I can't even smell it anymore. Like, to me, I was like, wow, like, you know, that must be so sad. You know, he's older. I mean, it just inspired me to write a song about two people who have lost each other. But, you know, kind of make it a little bit different. I didn't know. I just thought that was really sweet and sad. You know, that like her favorite flower, and she'd been dead for 10, 15 years, that he couldn't even like smell it. You know what I mean?
Okay. Well, it's sort of an interesting thing to picture because, you know, you are still very young. Mm-hmm. And I guess to be able to put yourself in the place of somebody who, you know, is at the end of their road and kind of, you know, feel what it would be like. It's one of the things I think makes you a terrific writer, is, you know, to be able to do that, you've really got to be able to know yourself as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I found that one to be very interesting.
Yeah.
Last one I do want to talk about is also the one that you saved for last, which is the title track, A Killer's Dream. Now, that's another one, you know, it seems to be going two places at once. You know, it's got that whole kind of dark, murderous spin with it. But then the music, you know, I have never danced in my life and probably never will. But if I was going to dance to a song, that would be a good one to do.
Yeah, it's kind of dancey.
Exactly. So, again, I guess, why did you decide to pair those lyrics with something, you know, so opposite spectrum, so off the wall?
No, really. I think that, well, when I wrote the song, I heard the melody, I heard the music, and I heard the words, but the words weren't there. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I heard it in my mind, and then, so the music was there, and then I just wrote the words to fit what was already there. You know what I mean? And, of course, the words were, you know, inspired, but it's kind of, like, weird. It mixed up. It's just kind of, like, how it works. It's, like, part of me will do lyrics and music. They're kind of separate, usually, in my mind. Like, one's over here, then one's over here.
Well, left brain, right brain kind of thing. I mean, the lyrics maybe are more the left side, where you've got everything in order, and the brain is more of the right side.
Yeah, I think it's something like that.
Or maybe the other way, who knows?
Yeah, and then it just kind of mixed together. You know, the two went like, you know,
okay.
And then the song was made.
Well, like I said, you know, that to me was the best part of your album, is that those combinations do come together in such a unique way. And for anybody who likes roots music at all, but especially who likes roots music that's got that modern spin that's really not like anything you've ever heard, I really do have to recommend A Killer's Dream to them. Check it out. Go ahead, read the review, listen to a couple of the tracks on there. But really, support Rachel and pick up a copy. It's a great buy. And it's available from your website in a bunch of formats, like you said.
Yeah. www.rachelbrookmusic.com, and then from there there's the store, and it'll take you to everywhere you want to go.
Okay. And, you know, like I said, I think Rachel is an incredible talent, and she's going to be around for a long time. So if you haven't purchased any of her albums in the past or heard any of her albums in the past, this is just the start. But go out, take a listen to Killer's Dream, and I'm sure that you will fall in love and you'll follow her career for a long time. So, Rachel, thank you once again for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you so much.
All right. And you are, I'm sure, going to go upstairs and rock it. And I am looking forward to hearing that. So, once again, this has been another edition of No Surf Music Burning River Fireside Chat. This is your host, Jason D. Diesel Hammett. Once again, Rachel, thank you very much. And I am signing off. This has been a No Surf Music Burning River Fireside Chat. This is your host, Jason D. Diesel Hammett, signing off. Remember, No Surf Music is your source for the best in Americana, alt country, indie rock, and more. For original reviews and interviews, visit nosurfmusic.com.